All right, so get this. We're diving into the world of Saigai today.
Kazaigai.
Yeah, Saigai.
Oh, wow.
If you were around in like the early 2000s online comic scene, this name might ring a bell, or maybe a siren, considering all the drama. I found this Encyclopedia Dramatica article on him, and let me tell you.
Yeah. Encyclopedia Dramatica, those are
It
always
is a wild ride.
wow, yeah.
We're talking early internet fame, accusations of plagiarism,
Yeah.
a whole lot of controversy.
So much controversy.
It's a lot to unpack,
Yeah.
but luckily we have an expert here to help us make sense of it all.
I'm happy to be here.
What I find fascinating about Saigai is how his story really captures this specific moment in internet history.
It really does,
Like,
yeah.
think back to the early 2000s. Sprite comics were huge.
Oh,
You
yeah.
know, those comics made with video game graphics.
I remember those.
It was a whole thing.
Totally.
But the rules around stuff like copyright and online conduct, they were,
Yeah, there you
were
go.
still being figured out.
It was the Wild West out there. Yeah,
Exactly.
yeah.
So for anyone who might not know, Saigai's real name is Brion Bobian.
Okay.
He was a big deal in the Sprite comic world back in the day.
He was, yeah.
He ran this website called Fireball 20XL.
Fireball 20XL, I remember that.
It was like the place to be for artists and fans to share their work, a lot of which, by the way, focused on popular franchises like Sonic the Hedgehog and The Legend of Zelda.
Makes sense. Those were huge back then.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is where things get, well, controversial.
Okay, lead on me.
Saigai gained this reputation. Some people saw him as this like champion of creativity,
Right.
giving a platform to aspiring artists, you know?
Yeah, I can see that.
But then others, well, they accused him of exploiting those same artists, profiting off their work without giving them proper credit or compensation.
Ooh, that's not good.
It was a whole mess.
Yeah.
And there was this big conflict with a group called Sonic Fan Games HQ
I've heard of them.
that really highlights the tension that existed back then.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
It was a bit of a wild west, right?
It really was.
The lines between like fan creations, original content, and copyright were all blurry.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And that conflict with Sonic Fan Games HQ is a perfect example.
How so?
It kind of foreshadows the debates we still have today about copyright in online fan spaces. You
Most
know,
definitely.
think about all the fan art, remixes, mashups we see online today.
All the time.
It's like, are these transformative works that deserve their own recognition,
Right.
or are they infringing on the original creator's rights?
That's a tough question.
It really is.
Yeah.
And Saigai's story, it throws all of that into sharp relief.
Absolutely.
It really makes you think about how these early internet clashes shape the way we view content creation and ownership today.
I think it's had a huge impact.
For sure.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
What's that?
Saigai, he wasn't just focused on Sprite comics.
Really?
It's like he was constantly chasing internet fame,
Oh, I see.
dabbling in all sorts of creative endeavors.
Like what?
Well, for starters, he had this podcast called Washi Cho.
Why'd you chow?
Yeah.
What was that about?
Lots of inside jokes and, crude humor, according to our source.
Okay, that tracks.
And get this, he also tried his hand at music remixing.
Interesting.
But again, accusations of using other people's work without permission.
Oh no, not again.
And then there were the flash animations.
Flash animations.
Apparently, they were pretty terrible. But he
Ouch.
didn't stop there.
Where else did he go?
He ventured into YouTube.
YouTube, of course.
He had this series called Bastardize, some World of Warcraft videos, how-to guides.
Wow, he was all over the place.
It seems like he was trying to be a jack of all trades in the online world.
You wanted to do it all.
He did.
Yeah.
And, you know, this constant pursuit of online recognition, this need to be seen and heard, it might explain his eventual downfall.
Oh, what happened?
Well, in 2014, everything came crashing down.
Crashing down how?
Multiple ex-girlfriends and associates came forward with some very serious allegations.
Allegations of.
We're talking accusations of emotional abuse,
Oh, wow.
and even more disturbingly,
Yeah.
pedophilia.
That's serious.
It is.
Yeah.
And the internet, well,
Yeah, the internet.
it reacted swiftly and fiercely, as it often does.
It does.
Evidence against Saigai, it was compiled on websites, shared across social media platforms.
It spread like wildfire.
It was a digital reckoning.
It sounds like it.
One of the most powerful testimonies came from a woman named Shannon.
Shannon,
Yeah.
what did she say?
She bravely shared her experience of being just 13 years old when Saigai first contacted her.
13.
Yes. It's a chilling reminder of the dark side of online communities.
It really is.
And the potential for manipulation and exploitation, especially when there's a power imbalance.
Absolutely.
Her story, along with those of others, they really painted a disturbing picture of Saigai's behavior.
So what did he do?
Yeah.
How did he respond to all of this?
Well, his initial response, right, it only seemed to confirm those suspicions. He denied the accusations,
right,
threatened legal action, and tried to silence his victims.
Oh, no.
It was a classic case of damage control gone wrong.
Classic.
He lashed out instead of taking responsibility.
Which just made things worse.
Exactly. It fueled the firestorm against him.
So what happened then?
Well, eventually he did offer an apology.
He did.
Yeah. Right. It was widely seen as insincere and half-hearted.
Too little, too late.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating how quickly his carefully crafted online persona unraveled.
It really is.
It makes you wonder.
What's it at?
To what extent can we truly control our online identities?
Especially when those identities are built on a foundation of deception or exploitation.
Exactly. It's a question that resonates even more strongly in today's world of curated social media profiles and influencer culture.
For sure.
So, Saigai, he tried to erase his online presence, deleted his accounts, took down his websites, essentially tried to vanish from the internet.
Like he was never there.
But as our source so aptly puts it, he failed.
He did.
Miserably.
Miserably and hilariously.
Oh, I bet.
The internet has a long memory.
It does.
But the story doesn't end there.
It doesn't.
He actually attempted a comeback.
A comeback.
Yeah.
After all that.
Trying to rebrand himself, recapture that internet fame he once had.
Wow, this I have to hear about.
He launched a new project called Bitpolar.
Bitpolar.
Yeah, where he tried to reinvent himself as a Let's Player.
A Let's Player.
Yeah, you know those people who stream themselves playing video games and provide commentary?
Okay, so quite a departure from his sprite comic days.
It was.
Did he try to distance himself from his past at all?
Not exactly.
That's what you mean?
He brought back those original characters of his.
I love that.
The ones that look like a bizarre mashup of Dragon Ball Z and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, wow.
It's like he was trying to tap back into his old audience.
Mmm, risky move.
It backfired.
It did. People weren't buying it.
I can see why.
It was a classic case of trying to rewrite the narrative, but failing miserably.
Yeah, the internet doesn't forget.
It doesn't.
So what happened to Bitpolar?
Well, we'll delve deeper into his attempted comeback in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay, I'm hooked.
But for now, let's pause here.
Okay.
And let our listeners absorb all this information.
It's a lot to take in.
It really is.
Saigai's story is a wild ride.
It is.
And we've only just scratched the surface.
We have. All right, so we've established that Saigai, he was this complex figure, rose to prominence during this very specific era of the internet. Mm. But before we get to his attempted comeback, I think we should circle back to the accusations against him.
Right.
Specifically the ones related to pedophilia.
Yeah.
It's important to acknowledge that according to our source, there were no official police records or court records to actually corroborate these accusations.
Yeah. So, I mean,
the
absence of legal documentation, it doesn't necessarily invalidate the experiences of those who came forward.
It's important to remember that.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a really important point.
It is.
And I think it speaks to this broader issue of how we address and believe victims.
Yes.
Especially when it comes to online abuse.
Absolutely.
Where evidence can be difficult to gather and legal recourse can be limited.
For sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
And in Saigai's case.
Yeah.
The sheer volume and consistency of the accusations, coupled with his own erratic and often incriminating online behavior, it painted a pretty damning picture.
It did, yeah.
There's this one quote from Shannon's testimony that really stuck with me.
Okay, what is it?
She states, this all started when I was 13 years old, back in 2006. I had been a fan of Sai's for quite some time, but I had found his live journal and began leaving comments on it. He asked me who I was, and I said I was a female fan, which immediately caught his interest.
Right.
Yeah, that's chilling.
It really highlights the predatory nature of his interactions.
Yeah.
He specifically sought out young female fans, often leveraging his position of authority within the online comic community.
That's awful.
It is.
And there's also... Oh, sorry.
No, you go.
Well, there's also the emo poetry he wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Where he allegedly fantasized about murdering Shannon.
Seriously?
It's in the article.
Why?
It speaks to a level of, like, emotional instability.
It does.
And vindictiveness that's just deeply unsettling.
Yeah. And remember...
And this wasn't an isolated incident either.
Right, exactly.
Our source mentions that he had this pattern of writing similar fan fiction.
Oh, gosh.
About other exes... Often using their original characters to enact violence against them.
That's just...
It's dark.
It is.
And his attempts at damage control, they become even more problematic.
Yeah. When you consider this context, right?
For sure.
Instead of taking responsibility for his actions and genuinely apologizing to those he had harmed, he resorted to denial, threats... attempts to silence his victims.
A classic abuser tactic.
It is.
Yeah.
His initial response was just to lash out, try to protect his online persona.
At all costs.
At all costs.
Yeah.
It was only later when the backlash became overwhelming that he offered.
That he offered.
What many saw as a half-hearted and insincere apology.
It's like they always say, if you're going to apologize, you got to mean it.
And it's worth noting, the apology itself, it was long-winded.
Really?
Rambling. Mm-hmm. And often contradictory.
Like, he wasn't even sure what he was apologizing for.
Yeah, it felt more like an attempt to garner sympathy than a genuine expression of remorse.
Yeah, like a pity party.
And sprinkled throughout this whole apology were these, like, bizarre and almost comical details.
What kind of details?
Well, like, the fact that he claimed to have written part of it while sitting on the toilet.
He did not.
He did.
Oh, my God.
The quote is right here in our source.
Right. What's the quote?
I'm on the shitter right now typing this. I have my pants around my ankles and a nice big shit just came out of my ass.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Talk about undermining your own apology.
I know.
With some truly bizarre oversharing.
It's like he couldn't even maintain a consistent tone of seriousness or sincerity.
Couldn't even take himself seriously.
Even when addressing such serious accusations, it all just added to this sense that he wasn't fully grasping the gravity of the situation or the harm he had caused.
Oh, I get that.
This inconsistency, this inability to own up to his actions, it ultimately contributed to his downfall.
Makes sense.
The internet, with its keen sense of authenticity.
Oh, yeah.
And its intolerance for hypocrisy, it saw right through his facade.
So what did he do?
Well, he did what many disgraced internet personalities do.
Which is?
He attempted to vanish.
He tried to disappear.
He deleted his accounts, took down his websites, tried to scrub his digital footprint from existence.
But as we all know, the internet never forgets.
It doesn't.
And this brings us to...
This brings us to the...
intriguing,
yes,
if somewhat pathetic tale. Of his attempted comeback.
Oh, yes.
Are you ready to delve into the saga of Bitpolar?
I am strapped in and ready to go.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the world of PsyGuy. We've covered his rise to fame in the early internet's Wild West, his controversial practices, the serious accusations against him, and his failed attempt to rebrand himself. It's been a wild ride, to say the least.
It really has. And you know what strikes me is how much... PsyGuy's story, for all its bizarre twists and turns, really reflects these broader trends in online culture, both then and now. Absolutely. I mean, the whole issue of plagiarism and creative ownership that plagued PsyGuy, it's more relevant than ever in today's world of memes, remixes, and constantly evolving copyright laws.
Yeah, it really makes you think, like, where do we draw the line between inspiration and outright theft? And how do we give proper credit in a digital landscape where content is constantly being shared, repurposed, recontextualized?
It's a thorny issue, and PsyGuy's conflict with Sonic Fan Games HQ way back when it kind of foreshadowed these debates we're still having today.
Yeah, he was profiting off fan-created content.
Right.
And that didn't sit well with a lot of people.
It didn't.
It's like he was this microcosm of this larger tension between individual creators and fan communities, you know, especially when it comes to who benefits financially from the work.
And then there's the role of online communities.
Oh, yeah.
Which played such a significant role in both PsyGuy's rise and his downfall.
For sure.
On the one hand, his early success was totally fueled by the support of his fans.
Right. They were drawn to his, like, quirky style and his willingness to push boundaries.
But that same community ultimately turned on him when the accusations surfaced.
It's a reminder that these online spaces, they can be incredibly powerful forces for both good and bad.
They can.
They can foster creativity and connection, but they can also become breeding grounds for toxicity and mob mentality.
We see this all the time, don't we?
All the time. Social media pylons, cancel culture online, shaming these things can have real-world consequences.
Yeah.
And it's important to remember that there are human beings on the other side of those screens.
Absolutely. And Saigai's story also highlights the issue of power dynamics in online spaces, which is something we can't ignore.
Definitely not. He used his position of influence within the Sprite comic community to manipulate and exploit vulnerable individuals, particularly young women.
And this is something that transcends any particular online community, right?
Oh, absolutely. Whether it's gaming, social media, even professional networking platforms, whenever there's a disparity in power, there's a potential for abuse.
Which is why it's so crucial to promote digital literacy and critical thinking online. We need to be aware of the ways in which we can be manipulated, both by individuals and by algorithms. And we need to be willing to speak out against injustice, to support victims, and to hold abusers accountable even when it's difficult.
Silence only allows these harmful dynamics to fester and grow. Saigai's story is a stark reminder of that.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into the world of Saigai, it's worth asking, what's his lasting legacy? Is he just a footnote in internet history, a cautionary tale from a bygone era?
I think it's more than that. His story highlights these timeless truths about human nature, the allure of fame and the dark side of unchecked power, both online and offline.
Yeah, his specific brand of chaotic energy might seem like a relic of the past, but the issues he embodies, plagiarism, online exploitation, the complexities of fan culture, they're more relevant than ever.
It's a reminder that the internet is a reflection of ourselves with all our flaws and complexities. And as we navigate this digital landscape, it's crucial to remember the lessons we've learned from those who came before us. Even those whose stories are as messy and controversial as Saigai's.
He might be gone from the internet, but his saga serves as a valuable reminder of the challenges and responsibilities we face as digital citizens. You know, we need to be mindful of our actions, aware of the potential consequences, and committed to creating a safer, more ethical online world.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you found it insightful, thought-provoking, and maybe even a little bit entertaining. Until next time, stay curious and stay engaged.